Sound of Hockey episode 204. We're calling this one the Chris Peters episode because he's back for his fourth interview on the show, regaining him the title as best friend of the pod. Darren Brown here. It's just me for now. You'll hear John and Andy in a bit on the interview. But I am back from my 2-week vacation in Europe. It was amazing. Really incredible time. Went to Italy and Amsterdam for, I think it was like 12 days, something like that. So fantastic time. We might talk about it a little bit more next week when we're back in studio. But for now, we just have the interview. Now, I think you're going to really like the interview. We talk a decent amount with Chris, who, as you probably know, is a pretty big prospect guru. One of the things we discuss, though, is Shane Wright and where he thinks Shane Wright should slot in next season with the Kraken, or rather this season. And he has an interesting opinion on whether or not he should stick with the team, which I think is probably, you know, Kraken fans may not love it, but he gives pretty good reasoning for why he thinks the way that he thinks about it. So it's a fun interview as always. We love Chris. We love chatting with him. And like I said, it'll just be the interview this week. There's no real Kraken news other than we know training camp is coming soon and the players are back skating at Kraken Community Iceplex. But that's pretty much it. So I think the timing here is good. Again, we'll get back to our regular format next week. But in the meantime, here he is, Mr. Chris Peters.
Breathe in for luck. Breathe in so deep. This air is blessed. You share with me.
We now welcome back on The Sound of Hockey, the official best friend of the pod, regaining his spot on the throne with his fourth appearance on the show. Welcome back, Chris Peters. Thank you so much for joining us again. We missed you. How have you been?
I missed you guys too. I've been great. I'm glad to resume the title. I heard Allison Lukin was encroaching on my territory, and quite frankly, I can't have that. So I'm back, and it's great to be with you guys. Always fun.
Yeah, we're excited to have you again, and it has been a while, and there's been a lot going on in your life. Most notably, I saw you went to what you called an adult emo show a few nights ago. I was just curious what your favorite Dashboard Confessional song is.
Elder emo show, I think, is the official terminology.
Oh, okay.
As I am now. I'm also a geriatric millennial, I think, is the other thing.
Cool.
I think that's what it is, or elder millennial. I'm not even sure what we're doing anymore. But Dashboard Confessional, Andrew McMahon, formerly of Something Corporate.
Mm-hmm.
Now
and Jack's Mannequin.
And Jack's Mannequin. Mm-hmm. And he played songs from both bands, and I was like, yep, this is it. This is my wheelhouse. My favorite Dashboard song is probably, I guess hands down is like it's such a cliche, but it's like, that was right in my wheelhouse, right when I was in my feelings as a 16-year-old on the south side of Chicago. So why not? You know,
this is not in the wheelhouse for John and Andy, but it is in my wheelhouse. Little known fact, I was actually the lead singer of an emo cover band called Rising Phoenix in high school. We were pretty terrible, but it was fun.
Yeah. I was the drummer of an emo band, and one of our best covers was Teenage Dirtbag, which is now viral on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping I can find some footage of us singing that song, and maybe I can also go viral.
Well, maybe we have a collab. We have a collab going on here, right?
Yeah, like,
there you go.
I think we just need and Andy, you play the guitar,
I play guitar,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so we got a band.
I don't do
here.
Anything.
We need a bassist. If we can find a bassist.
I'll
call my bassist. I have a bassist.
Well, and if we're playing something corporate songs, we need a pianist as well. So we'll have to.
That's right.
I have to hear a something corporate song first before I can play it, though.
Yeah, you're not going to like it, Andy. I'll tell you that much right now.
Andy, I don't think this is in your wheelhouse, so. Yeah,
a lot has changed, though, since we last spoke with you. I know you've been working for a couple different places now. So where are you now? Tell our listeners what you've been up to recently.
Yeah. So, you know, I was last draft almost the entire way until the actual draft. I was with Daily Faceoff. Great opportunity there. That was a lot of fun working with Frank Saravalli and the crew over there, and learned a lot and had a lot of fun. But, you know, an opportunity came my way right before the draft to join Flow Hockey and Flow Sports, which is basically, they've really made a lot of headway in racing and amateur wrestling, track and field. I mean, there's just so many things that they cover over there and a lot of streaming service. And now they have the ECHL, the USHL, CCHA, Atlantic Hockey, Some others coming along the way, and Alaska Fairbanks as well. If you're all you Nanox fans out there, can watch Nanox hockey on Flow Hockey. But So my job, my role is a senior content creator, but it's a little bit more involved than that. I'll obviously be doing a lot of draft content, a lot of NHL prospect content. But I'm also, you know, kind of helping set the future of what hockey is going to look like at Flow Hockey and Flow Sports in general. So a lot of fun things are happening. I was actually just down in Austin, which is where their headquarters is, and got a great office in downtown Austin, and really cool to be around the people that work there. And, you know, I think they're making a big investment in hockey, and not just, you know, the leagues and the different places. You know, obviously the NHL gets all the attention, and rightfully so. It's the biggest league and everything, but there's such a vast landscape beneath the NHL. And I think that's, you know, what Flow Hockey is going to serve. And obviously with being a prospects guy and having worked at USA Hockey and having done mostly amateur hockey, this is right, you know, where I want to be as well. So I'm really excited to be a part of it. And I think that we're going to have a lot of fun things for hockey fans. You know, a lot of our written and video content is free. You can subscribe to get, you know, the streaming of USHL and ECHL and everything else. So it's been an exciting couple of months since I've been there, and I only get more excited that the season's almost here.
Love it.
I watched quite a bit of hockey.tv, right? Which they, yep. I think they purchased, right?
Yeah, so they did. Yeah. So Hockey TV is also now part of Flow Hockey. And yeah, I think if you have a Hockey TV subscription, you'll be able to, you know, access the things that are on Flow Hockey. And I think the other nice thing about it is I think this is going to lower the annual cost for fans that do want to have a wide breadth of that. And then, you know, the nice thing is if you do subscribe to all the hockey stuff on Flow Hockey, you can get all the other things that are also available. And so maybe, you know, we have marching, we have all sorts.
Who doesn't you know, like to watch marching?
Watch marching. You got cheerleading competitions. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of like ESPN2 back in the day. We don't have any World's Strongest Man as far as I know, but there's a lot on there, and it's, you know, it's cool because it really serves a lot of underserved fan bases and gives them a place to go where they can see all their favorite sports. And
it did get me through some of the down days of COVID, right? When the NHL wasn't playing, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to watch this Vancouver Island Junior Hockey League.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the only thing on, you know, Saturday night at like 9 p.m. So, I mean,
the Noda Gretzky's.
The Noda Gretzky's were the best. It was some like Toronto adult beer league or something. So anyway,
I love it.
So how does this impact your ability to do the Iowa Heartlanders games, Chris?
I will still be doing at least the game. So we have usually 7 or 8 games on local TV in Iowa, simulcast on Flow Hockey. So I will actually continue to do at least those games and maybe a few more, just kind of as my schedule allows. I'm actually gonna be on the road quite a bit this year at various events and things that hopefully we'll, you know, be able to have on Flow. And, you know, now that we have the USHL as well, that'll be a primary focus for me in terms of, you know, the content that we're putting together. So So I'll still be able to do some broadcasting. I'm hoping that I'll also be able to do a few events on Flow that are, you know, just kind of one-off event kind of things, you know, because I really enjoy doing that. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of exciting things coming down. I you know, people are probably gonna get sick of me because I'm gonna try and be everywhere at a lot of different things.
Good, so, we want it. Yeah.
Well, so for Kraken fans, then, if you have Flow Hockey, we should probably check the schedule to see when the Kansas City Mavericks take on the Iowa Heartlanders, because that would be pretty cool if we get, you know, Kansas City Mavericks with Chris Peters on the call.
Yeah, you know,
in theory.
And last year, well, I'm going to have to go ahead and look it up, because last year the Kansas City Mavericks played the Iowa Heartlanders in the first ever Iowa Heartlanders game.
Oh,
at a sold out Extreme Arena in Coralville. It was one of the cooler things I've been a part of, just to see hockey very near where I live, and pro hockey and people excited about it. But the Mavericks and the Heartlanders had some. They had some battles. There was a little bit of a rivalry going there. And, you know, I think the Mavericks had a guy that you know, if he wasn't a hockey player, he'd probably be a, like a mob enforcer or something like that. Because, like, so that was
all right.
That was always fun. So yeah, I'm going to circle that on the calendar. I don't know if
we will too
them, for those TV games that I was doing, but yeah, but I'm super, super excited to see that. I had forgotten that Kansas City and the Kraken had linked up, but yeah. So the Heartlanders are the Wild's affiliate. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Last year was just to see a team kind of in its infancy was just super cool.
We can relate.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You guys a little bit different, but
yeah,
it's still pretty good.
We're a very pro ECHL podcast, by the way. We love talking about the Kelly Cup, but as long as we're talking about the ECHL, did you see who the Allen Americans signed to bring back to North America for the first time since 2019, 2020?
I really hope it's Colton Saucerman.
Of course. that's why I figured you were going to Texas, right? To cover the story.
That's what I should have done. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. I think the first time we had you on, we talked about Colton Saucerman. So and you like responded right. Well, I think you were tweeting about it. So that
I kept calling Carson Soucy Colton Saucerman too, just out of habit. Even though I was like, I know they're two different guys, but I got Colton Saucerman on the brain. So
yeah. Anyway,
I'm pumped to hear that.
Yeah, I haven't seen a headshot since he left. So I'm hoping
to see him. He's cleaned up. I think he's got a bald head now, and a big, very well-kempt beard. And he's 30. He's getting up there now. He's 30 years old. Yeah. So
all right.
Yeah.
Well, you are fresh off of World Juniors, which was a bit of a roller coaster for you. Where does this year's World Junior gold medal game rank in the tourney's history of fantastic finishes?
Yeah. I mean, if you would have asked me where this tournament ranked, I would have said it's like one of the worst ever. And then we get the gold medal game and it's like salvaged everything, which is kind of amazing. So I'd say, you know, as far as, you know, the 2018 gold medal game was incredible. The, you know, both the US, Canada, the Troy Terry shootout, the John Carlson, you know, but the difference between this game is, you know, you have this juggernaut. Canada didn't look like anybody was going to come close to him. And then Finland really played with them and at various points of that game outplayed them. Then you get this incredible finish where basically Finland's an inch away from winning the game. And then Mason McTavish said no. And, you know, I was in the press box and we were kind of closer to that side. And as I'm watching it and I see what happens is like, I literally, you know, there's no cheering in the press box, but there is emotional reactions. Like I wasn't going to cheer for Canada anyway, but I'm like, I think I actually, you know, uttered an expletive very loudly. just because it was so shocking. You're like, how did that not go in? And then, you know, of course they go down the other way and Kent Johnson scores the game winner and just a phenomenal play. Cause he makes a dazzling move. It looks like it's going to go in. The goalie makes an incredible save. And then he just has the wherewithal to finish it. You know, it was a phenomenal game. It was one of the most exciting games I've been able to watch. And certainly, you know, I think that Mason McTavish play, you know, there are a lot of signature moments over the course of a World Juniors, you know, in history, and more than the game-winning goal. I think that play that Mason McTavish made is going to live on forever, even though it was this weird summer World Juniors that honestly, the tournament sucked. I'm not going to lie. It was not fun to cover. It was not good quality. And the competition, even though we had just, you know, they were talking about how much there was parity in the quarterfinal games. Every single quarterfinal game was a slog. But then you get this amazing gold medal game and
packed barn, right?
It was totally packed. You know, it was mostly packed. It was, you know, they still had a section of the upper deck curtained off, but there was, I think, 12,000 or 13,000 there for the gold medal game, which is still about 5,000 shy of capacity. But it was loud. There was energy in the building and, you know, it was just nonstop. So, and, you know, we had a lot of really great players that were there that decided to go and made the most of a bad situation.
What did you think of the low attendance throughout the tournament? I mean, that seemed like that was kind of a story.
I mean, it was exactly what I expected. I think, you know, people can say, okay, well, it's hockey in Canada. It's the World Juniors in Canada. Mm-hmm. It's August. Like there is the World Juniors is such a traditional, you know, winter holiday event that is as much a part of the buzz as anything else. Everybody's in this great mood. We've just gone through all our winter holidays, and now we've got hockey on Boxing Day, which we don't celebrate in the United States, but it is an international holiday because it is the World Juniors. And I think that was a big factor. I do think that, you know, what's going on with Hockey Canada played a role. It didn't necessarily play the defining role of why the attendance was poor, because obviously if people were that upset, they wouldn't have showed up to the gold medal game, and they did, you know, but I do think that was a factor. Hockey Canada officials ducked the media the entire tournament, which was embarrassing. And then the whole thing was weird. It never felt quite right. And, you know, I think that in the end, I hope it never happens that we have to do it that way again. You know, it certainly was nice to be able to spend, you know, warmer weather in Edmonton, even though I was trapped in my hotel room for about a week. But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting thing. But yeah, the gold medal game kind of salvaged what I thought was a pretty poor World Juniors.
So, and McTavish had, like, obviously a great tournament, but were there any other prospects that kind of jumped off the page for you as far as had a good tournament?
Yeah, you know, I think McTavish was so far and away the best player, just unstoppable, too good for the tournament, it felt like at times.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, just really outstanding for him. And, you know, I fully expect him to make the Ducks out of camp and make an impact next season. You know, beyond him, you know, I thought Jesper Wallstedt had just a tremendous tournament for Sweden, because Sweden had such a poor tournament besides him. Apparently, you know, nobody could score goals for them. And if, you know, if Jesper could have scored some goals, I think that would have helped. But, you know, but he had like a 940 save percentage. He was dominant. He lost to the U.S., said, you know, he felt like he let the whole country down. I was like, wow, that's extreme. You know, it was a preliminary round game. They don't matter that much, but, you know, and he felt pretty bad about it. And then he bounced back and just, I think they gave up, you know, maybe a one or two even strength goals the rest of the way, you know, so he was just dominant there. You know, I think you look at guys like Ridley Gregg before he got hurt, had a great tournament for Canada. I thought Logan Stankoven was unreal. You know, he set up the game winning goal by just absorbing contact and still found a way to make a play. And then, you know, Kent Johnson had all day to do what he did, but Stankoven, you know, basically made that play happen by, you know, attracting everybody to him. And he had also, you know, gotten the turnover in the neutral zone to start that play. But he had a lot of points and looked really good. You know, I think, you know, there weren't a ton of guys where it was just like, wow, what a tournament, you know, like it was, there were a lot of guys that played well, that were fine. We didn't have too many major injuries or suspensions, which was nice. So, yeah. So, I mean, all in all, I think that, you know, those were some of the guys that really stood out the most. I think Finland had a lot of guys that played really well, like Atu Ratu and Joakim Kamel. You know, the U.S. had a couple of guys that had decent tournaments as well, but obviously they had the early ouster, so it kind of puts a damper on that. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I think a lot of players are hopefully, like, you know, the one thing I'm a little concerned about is, you know, how many of these guys go into training camp either tired or a little bit kind of they had to ramp up everything so quickly. But like Jesper Wallstedt, in his case, he said, you know, this was a perfect timing for me because I need to get used to playing on North American ice. I'm going into training camp. You know, so for some guys, it'll be a benefit. And I think for others, like the one guy, like Mason McTavish, just had like the best week of his life. And now he's got to go to training camp and fight for a job. You know, it's a tough transition. So I'll be interested to see how that works out for him.
So obviously, World Juniors is always fun, but we are kind of Kraken centric here on Sound of Hockey.
Kind of.
We kind of want to talk to you about some of the draft that the Kraken had. What was your reaction over the whole Shane Wright? I feel weird saying he dropped because he only went down three spots, but what was your reaction to that, to him ending up going fourth?
I just want to clarify really quick. We're a Colton Saucerman podcast that also occasionally talks about the Kraken.
That's true. I apologize. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah.
At least when I'm on.
Pro ECHL.
Yeah. At least when I'm on. So here's, like, basically I knew, like, if Montreal did not take Shane Wright, he was going to drop. He was going to drop. He was not going to go to the next two teams. I was pretty confident of that. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't sure. Also, you know, I wasn't sure if the Kraken would go center or defense, given where they were. I think when Nemec was gone, you know, that certainly took any likelihood of them taking one of the top two defensemen off the table. I think Nemec had kind of established himself. And so, you know, so I would say the thing was, as we started kind of talking, you know, when the draft gets closer, obviously things start trickling out a little bit. And there was a lot of belief that Montreal was not going to take Shane Wright. So, I mean, you know, in the end, you know, I had him number two on my list. I think that there were, you know, I did talk to one team that had him lower outside of the top five. And I did have a couple of teams that I talked to say they didn't love what they were hearing at the combine. Not that he's like a character. It's not a character thing. It's more just like, you know, do we, you know, what do we, it's hard to say because I wasn't in the room. So I didn't hear exactly, you know, how he was answering questions, but I think that a lot of teams wanted to push him. They wanted, a lot of teams asked him why he didn't play anywhere the year before, which I think is an interesting question because a lot of players found places to play. I think Shane Wright had made the decision that, hey, I want to see if the OHL is going to come back. We think they're going to come back. And then they never came back, which is not his fault. So it's just, it's an interesting thing, but like, you know, even at 15 years old, Connor Bedard went to Sweden for a couple of months, you know, like it was, I think there was a lot of questions about, you know, hey, this is too high stakes. Why didn't you do that? So that was a question they didn't love the answer to. I think that was another, you know, more just, you know, pushing him a little bit more. His postseason was only okay. But what does that mean? Like in the end, you know, if you're a Kraken fan, you have every right to be excited about a guy that had the opportunity to, you know, go number one. He didn't, but now he's there. And now he's got a chip on his shoulder, which is a great thing for some players. You know, he's got opportunity. The one thing that I would say that I would be careful about is I don't think he's ready to play in the NHL. That's my personal opinion. I don't think that the Kraken is the right place for him next season. So
that's going to be an unpopular opinion on this podcast. I'll tell you that.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. The thing is, I think last year exposed a couple of things that he still needs to work on. I would like to see him dominate at the junior level before he comes over. Another question that was asked by a lot of people is why didn't he go to the World Juniors? I personally didn't have a problem with anybody that opted out because the timing was terrible. And I think that everybody should have made their own decision. And a lot of people did. Do I think it would have helped set the table for maybe a, you know, if, yes, but he could have also gotten hurt and, you know, anything else could happen.
Ron Francis also said at the draft that the Kraken didn't want him to go.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of teams said that. There were players that made the decision themselves. There were teams that made the decision for their players, and that's totally fine. If I were the Anaheim Ducks, I wouldn't have let Mason McTavish go either. That might just be the American in me. I'm not sure. But yeah, but, you know, and I think the thing is now this is me saying this based on the information that I have now. The information that is going to change is Shane Wright has had a summer to train. He's had an opportunity to get stronger. He's had an opportunity to get prepared. We'll see kind of where he goes in terms of training camp. You know, how does he look in those situations? You still get those 9 games that you, if you want to give him a shot to make the big club. Some guys also don't handle going back to junior very well, which is actually all the more reason to send them back because if they can't handle that, how are they going to handle when things get tough in the NHL? You know, so that is a thing that I'll, you know, do I think he's going to make the team out of camp? I do. I think he will. I think he'll probably stay, but he's another one of those candidates as well, where it would have been nice if he had the option to send him to the AHL. But I think that having the lost season, having, you know, gone through a tumultuous draft season that started poorly, got better in the second half, and ended average. Players with that profile don't necessarily translate immediately to the NHL. So we'll see what he can do. But I think in the end, this is, you know, a long meandering thought based on, you know, the question of what I thought of him dropping. But, you know, I think that we're going to find out a lot more about Shane Wright in these next couple of weeks to find out about, you know, his character, his drive, his motivation, you know, where he's at, how he spent his summer after getting drafted. And he has a chance to flip any doubts that anybody has about his ability to play right away. So I know he thinks he's ready. I know I'm sure the Kraken have a pretty strong case for him to be ready. I just don't know yet.
So the next two questions I had were about this very topic. So you kind of answered them, but to pivot a little bit.
That's how I do it.
Which just is boom. Fine. Yeah. Which is yeah. Totally fine. Yeah. Totally fine. But just to pivot off that a little bit. I mean, it does appear that the Kraken are going to start him in the NHL just based on what the things Ron Francis said. And I think part of that World Junior decision from the Kraken standpoint was they envisioned him to be on the roster. And I think, you know, Ron Francis has stopped short of saying that's what's going to happen. He'll kind of say we picture him on the roster, but of course he has to earn it. So assuming he does play in Seattle all year, when you look at what would be the best for him there, I mean, a lot of people are projecting him to be on the second line center, which feels pretty high. What do you think he can gain from playing down the lineup a little bit, like as a third or fourth line center and fewer minutes, maybe?
Timing, you know, being able to get up to NHL speed, understanding, you know, how to make an impact on a game when you're not producing, you know, how to use, you know, he has advanced hockey sense. There's no question mm-hmm. he's a brilliant player, you know, so he's got high-end hockey sense and that'll allow him to compete. But the one thing that I would say to Kraken fans is, what did you think of Alexi Lafreniere's rookie year? What did you think of Jack Hughes's rookie mm-hmm. year? What did you think of Kaapo Kakko's rookie year, second year, third year? Was that the right call by those teams? I think in at least in the case of Hughes went from the NTDP to the NHL, gigantic jump. Mm-hmm. Lafreniere went from a shortened QMJHL season to the NHL. And was way too good for the Q. Like going back to the Q probably wouldn't have helped him. And then, you know, Owen Power made the decision last year to go back to school. I think that these last couple of years have proven that Connor McDavid is a freak. Austin Matthews is a freak. And if you're not a freak, you can't play in your first year, honestly. Like I just don't, you know, like that's my thought on it. The Red Wings let Moritz Seider. They put him in the AHL. When the AHL shut down, they sent him back to Sweden. They could have had him on their roster last a season before, but they waited, and then he was one of the best defensemen in the league in year one. You know, like it's like there's nothing wrong with slow playing it. But I think just to get back to your question, Andy, is like, you know, playing down the lineup can be helpful. You know, being up in the lineup and maybe playing on the wing can be helpful sometimes for centers. It's just the matter. You have to know very quickly that the player is going to be able to handle that and not having the minutes when he was playing, you know, 23, 24 a night in junior, and where he could play 23 and 24 a night as well and dominate and continue to build confidence and timing and everything else. But I mean, the biggest benefit to his development at this point is, you know, playing with against stronger competition, you know, getting an opportunity to understand the physicality of the NHL, and then basically being okay with not producing. I don't think he's going to score a lot this year. I think he's going to have a chance to put up some points, but you know, what is a good season for a first year player anymore? You know, most of the guys that are coming in and winning the Calder and everything else are guys that spent extra time. You know, the first year guys are not winning the Calder a whole lot. Mm-hmm. They do, but it's not a whole lot. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, managing expectations is going to be the other thing. You know, he's always been the best. Like I think that going forth is like the first time that somebody said Shane Wright was not the best. That's the first time it's ever happened. And how does he deal with it when he gets to the NHL? And it's like, you're actually like our fifth best center, you know, that talent wise. So like that's the other thing. I mean, you know, and I think you also can just look no further than Matty Beniers and say, how much did that last year help him? You know, he walked into the NHL and had 9 points in 10 games. Like it was nothing. He walked onto the team and was one of what? Would you say he was their best or maybe one of their three best players?
He was one of their best. I thought at the end of his first practice that he might be the best player on the team. That thought crossed my mind. I'm like, he might already be the most skilled guy on the team.
And that's the hard part of this. That's the hard part of this is that you want Shane Wright to walk in and be that.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if he can. But like, think about it though. No matter what, like this is the most important decision for the organization. Getting this right, because if you do get it right, no pun intended, you've got Matty Beniers and Shane Wright down the middle for the next 10 to 15 years. And now you are set. You have the building blocks of your organization. So they can't screw this up. And they have to know very quickly whether or not he belongs in the NHL.
Yep. So Beniers, we saw him at development camp this summer, and he looks, I mean, he's playing against competition that's young, right? So he's not playing against adults or like, you know, NHL players necessarily, but man, he looked like an absolute man amongst boys. Like he just did whatever he wanted with the puck out there. I'm curious what you think is kind of his ceiling in his career. How good can he be?
I think he can be a long-term number one center. I think he can eventually get to, I'm not going to say he's going to get to the Patrice Bergeron level of two-way centerdom, because that's just a bar that is so high to clear. But he's good. He's on that path. He's on that path to be an elite two-way center, a guy that could, you know, well, I don't know if he'll win Selkies, but I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a high-producing center that plays all the tough matchups, that is an absolute bear to play against, that has swagger. You know, I think he's going to be the captain eventually. You know, I think he'll be, I think he's got the personality. He's such an easy guy to be around. Everybody loves him. And everybody loves the way that he plays. You can't argue with it because he's not going to get outworked. So, you know, I think, you know, I feel more comfortable projecting Matty Beniers as the number one center of the future than I do Shane Wright, though that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But what if you have two number one centers? Mm-hmm. Now you've got
good
now
problem like, to have.
Yeah. It's position. Like, oh, this is nice. I like this. A lot of teams are always searching for that number two center.
Yeah.
They're like, who's that guy that's going to, we can't pay him as much as the number one center, but you know, like you might have two guys, you know, you might have two $10 million centers here, depending on if everything goes right. But I think Matty is everything we thought he was going to be so far, and he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
If you're a betting person and you like to bet on the Calder Trophy, when it comes to Kraken rookies, bet Beniers over Wright.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, it's not even like that's if that's your decision, it's not even close. But the thing is, I mean, it's still going to be tough, right? You still need to have, there's going to be some growing pains. And as this team continues to build out its core, but I would say that, you know, Matty Beniers, that might actually benefit a guy like Beniers. What if he's the number one center on this team? Mm-hmm. He is, you know, the leading scorer of this team, and they're better than they were last year. That says a lot about what he can do. It's going to be an interesting rookie field this year. Like, you know, I think there's going to be a lot. Obviously, you got McTavish now in that conversation. You've got Kent Johnson in that conversation. You know, there are a lot of players. Owen Power. I mean, there are going to be a lot of guys that are going to be playing a pretty significant role on their teams at very young ages. And I credit to, like, and think of all those guys that we just talked about are all guys that spent an extra year at college or junior. So, and that's the thing. If you are betting the Calder Trophy, bet somebody that is not a first year rookie. It's so much harder for those guys to win because they're just not ready.
So outside of Shane Wright, the rest of the Kraken draft got some pretty good appraise. I think you gave him a high rating.
Oh yeah.
What did you think? Was it just the number of players, or was it also the quality?
It was the number and the quality. I mean, it was definitely the two together. Because I think what I saw there is that this draft, with the number, with the volume of picks that they had, it felt more like this was a better package for an expansion team. Like, I was among the many that was like, why didn't they make side deals to stockpile draft picks in year one? And I still will question that, you know, but at the same time, you look at what they got this year. And I mean, I'm just pulling up the draft now just to refresh my memory, because I did give him a high grade because I love Jagr Furkus. Mm. You know, getting him at 35th and getting an opportunity to get a player that I think is going to be a high scorer, you know, in the vein of, you know, can he be a Braden Point-esque player?
He's got a few years to go though, right? Before.
He's tiny. Yeah. He's small, and you know, he's got to get through it. Yanni Niemann is going to be a really good player too. I think that he's, you know, he's got the size, he's got, you know, good vision, he's got good hands for his size, you know, so I like him a fair amount. I think that he's one of those picks that, you know, just keep an eye on him. It's going to be a bit of a slow burn because he's still kind of growing into his body a little bit, But I mean, he is a legit player. Really liked him last year at the under 18s, and you know, saw a lot of value in him. You know, Nicholas Cocho is interesting. He didn't get the starting role in the World Under 18s, but I did hear from some scouts in Finland they thought he was the better of the two goalies, even though Leinonen was the higher rated goalie. He was number one in central scouting, and he also was their starter. Goyette is a bit of a wild card. He comes and goes. It's very inconsistent. Probably one of my most frustrating players from the last draft. However, at his best, I get frustrated because I know there's a lot of talent there. He's quick. He's got good skill. It's just he's got to find some consistency. So I think that second round haul, there's a good chance you got some solid NHL players there. I thought Cocho, that might have been a little early. But it's okay. Like, you know, you need to build your goaltending pipeline. He has upside.
Yeah, we talked to Robert Kron about that, and because we thought the same thing, right? Like, why pick him now if you can pick him later? His rationale was that he was the number one goalie that they had on their board, and they really liked him, and they had 4 second round picks anyway. So they said they made kind of an organizational draft management type of decision, right, and just grabbed him when they could, which I thought made sense. You know,
it does. And you get the guy that you want. And that actually is a philosophy that a lot of teams will have, is that, you know, are we going in the exact order of our draft board, or are we weighting certain positions more? Best, like, you know, everybody's like, do you just take the best player available? Yes, you take the best player available on your list based on your set of needs, which is, so best player available is so relative. It's like, you know, it's not like we're picking every, you know, in order off of Bob McKenzie's list. That's just that's not how it works.
Auto draft.
Yeah, it's just like, this guy was like, one of the things that I've learned since I started doing, you know, prospect rankings and draft rankings and everything like that is my list is not the gospel. So like it does not, you know, best player available is so relative to it's different for every team. But yeah, I think that does make sense. And if he's the guy that you wanted, then that's the guy you go get. And when you have 4 second round picks, it allows you flexibility to take a couple of swings. Because I think Furkus and Niemann are the two most likely to be NHL players out of that quartet. And then you get a chance with Cocho, who has high upside, and Goyette, who has high upside, but needs to mature, essentially.
Well, speaking of Jagr Furkus, how, in your estimation, how much does it help maybe speed along his development that he's going back to a Moose Jaw team that's going to be pretty good? And it's got guys like Braden Jaeger on it, who was dynamite at the Hlinka tournament and should be a high draft pick himself. Not only that they have a Jagr and a Jagr on the team, but that they have complementary players that he'll be playing alongside.
Yeah, you know, I think that's huge. And being on good teams helps a lot, being surrounded by good players. And it just allows you to learn how to play at a certain speed and with certain precision. I think that was one of the things that stood out when I was watching Canada during the World Juniors, is that they finished so many plays. Like, it's not, I'm not even just talking about scoring goals. It's just, you know, they complete passes, and they, you know, you can't give a guy a bad pass, you know, and like all of a sudden that just takes so much time to kind of develop. But when you played with top players and you say, if I put this puck here, he's going to be there and he's actually going to be able to do something with it. That helps a ton. So I think that's going to be big for them. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at that Moose Jaw team, should be very good. It's an opportunity for him to just, you know, be a leader on a team that's going places. And that helps as well in development.
Do you have Braden Jaeger ranked pretty high for the 23 draft? Are you there? Are you that far yet?
Yeah, I was just looking back at my board.
Your board? Oh, wait, yeah. We got to zoom in on that. Hold on.
No, it's blocked by my gigantic head right now. But yeah, it's certainly not complete yet, but he's going to be very high.
So looking back at the 2021 draft briefly, the Kraken, I think they got hated on a little bit because of their Riker Evans pick in the second round, and they had Ryan Winterton in the third round. And both of those guys had really good seasons this past year, right? And I kind of thought that made up for it. In your eyes, has the assessment of how they drafted last year improved a little compared to the early days after the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think Riker Evans was another case where that was a guy they were just so much higher on than everybody else. And that's fine. Like, if it might work out. I'm still not like 100% sold on him, you know, being like, I think he's going to push for a spot this year, but I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't get one.
Yeah, I think he could probably use some AHL time, certainly.
I agree.
He's eligible for that now.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that was – that, and I think the other thing, too, that with Evans, it was just like, man, this is – it's a little early, but it's also like, wow, you know, he's kind of old, you know, like all these different things. You're like, you're just wondering what was available. Was there higher upside left on the table? But, yeah, but I think Ryan Winterton is a tremendous example of the players that missed a year of OHL time and then just came back flying.
Yeah.
And injury stuff aside, just an outstanding year. And he's a player that I'd ranked him that year, but fairly low just because I didn't really know what to make of him. All I had to go off of was that World Juniors and he played, or the World Under 18s, and he played well there. But like, that's all I had to really go off of. And he had a decent rookie year, but it wasn't anything special. And then you're just kind of like, man, I don't know what to make of this guy, but they obviously took advantage of his drop. You know, like if he would have made, let's say he does play that season, there's a good chance he's a much higher draft pick, you know? So credit to him for using the year off and getting better. And he was always one of those guys that I would use as an example of, we can't use the year away as an excuse when Ryan Winterton and Wyatt Johnston are two of the best players in the OHL and they didn't play anywhere last year. So yeah, so that was great to see him.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah, and he had big injuries too, so good on him.
Yeah, exactly.
He did well.
Exactly. Yep.
So I know it's a little ways away and you're just coming off the most recent World Juniors, but is there any Kraken prospects you anticipate potentially making the World Juniors of any team?
Yeah, I mean, I think Winterton will probably be in the mix for Canada. You know, I would say Shane Wright might be there if things don't go a certain way. Obviously, I think if you're a Kraken fan still, you have to at least pay some attention to Connor Bedard. So I know. I hope it doesn't happen that way for you next year so you have a little more fun. But it's at least a possibility that although I don't know if anybody's catching Chicago or Arizona. So we'll see.
Yeah, or Montreal.
Or Montreal, yeah. So, but yeah, but that's trying to think of who else would potentially be in that mix.
I think Ty Nelson was invited to a camp.
Yeah,
Ty Nelson was a fringe guy.
Yeah, definitely on the bubble. Definitely a bubble guy for that.
Furkus? Not yet, right?
Furkus, I mean, he should be at least a consideration, but it probably not.
Yeah.
You know, just because of how it depends on how many guys from Canada make the NHL. Yeah, but I would say, yeah, I mean, Nicholas Koko certainly could be on Finland's roster. You know, given that he wasn't the starter at the under 18s, I think it's a little unlikely that he'll, you know, get meaningful playing time there. But, you know, he at least has a chance. And yeah, so I don't know. It's tough to say. Like you're looking at all these different teams and you're trying to, you know, project them out. You know, Niemann could be there too. Finland's going to have a lot of guys to replace. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think that those are probably the guys that you could kind of look at. You know, if Shane Wright doesn't end up making the Kraken, he would absolutely be in the mix to play for Canada and probably would play for Canada.
In my last question, we've had you on before. We've definitely talked about Colton Sossaman quite a bit, the Gunnar Wolf Fontaines of the world. Who's next on your all-name prospect list?
Ooh, man.
Ivan.
Well, yeah, he's we did confirm that Ivan is not his middle name. He doesn't have a middle name.
So let's break this down. So he has two first names, each of which are Ivan.
Yes.
Right? And his last name is also Ivan, spelled the same way.
Well, it's just Ivan. It's just the first and last name.
Oh, okay. So it's two Ivans, not three Ivans.
TSN put a graphic up.
Yeah.
And they said his name is Ivan. And then his parents were like, no, it isn't.
I saw that graphic.
Yeah. So, gosh, I'm trying to think off the top of my head and now I got to look back at my list.
The U.S. team, I love the last year that NDDP was, or was that Red Savage and
Red?
And
oh, yeah.
Reed Duke. Ago, yeah. And yeah, those guys. Yeah, that was an all name team. For
yeah.
Sure,
yeah. Red Savage. And he was on the junior team this year. He played really well, actually. Yeah. Red Savage and full name Redmond. We had Remington Koppel on the junior team this year, believe named after the gun.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, Remington Steel. But yeah, the gosh, dude, for this year, at least among the top guys. I mean, Dalibor Dvorsky's fun to say.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, I'm just trying to think. There's really not a ton of, you know, Quentin Musty is an interesting
well,
name.
Well, I guess we'll have to keep an eye on flowhockey.com for your
that's right.
For your all article on the all name teams.
I can nominate one, Chris, for you to consider.
Oh, okay.
A guy, I don't think he's a top prospect, but he's playing for Youngstown in the USHL right now. And I believe he is committed to maybe Michigan State. I'd have to look that up. But his name is Winter Wallace.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Winter Wallace.
That sounds like a good Game of Thrones character.
Yeah, he is a Game of Thrones. Yeah, Winter is coming. I believe his
brother's name is Ocean or something similar.
Oh, wow. Yeah, brother is Dana Wallace.
Close.
But yeah, but Winter Wallace is a 6'3", 214-pound right shot, right winger, and he will be playing at Cornell this year.
Cornell,
so he's also smart.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, he was in camp for the Thunderbirds once, and I just love that name.
Yeah, Winter Obviously Wallace.
Didn't go that route.
All right. Well, Chris, hands down, this is the best podcast we have ever recorded. That would work if you replaced Dashboard Confessional lyrics. That would work. Do you get what I'm saying?
Hands down.
It's part of the set list, right? Is that part of the set list?
Yeah. Trying to bring it back full circle there.
I appreciated it.
See, I don't even get the hands down joke.
Right. I told you it's not his wheelhouse. So we said that from the beginning. But
yeah. Andy, go get yourself some feelings. Go listen to some emo.
I'll try.
Oh, boy. Well, Chris, this has been a lot of fun as always. Thank you. You've been very generous with your time. Listeners, go check him out on Flow Hockey. He's obviously creating lots of great content there and will be for the foreseeable future. So thanks as always for doing this with us. Best friend of the pod. We'll be watching this year. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you again, Chris, for joining us. You know, I'm sure that hearing the stuff about Shane Wright, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's probably a little concerning for some Kraken fans. But again, he makes a good point. And, you know, the kid is so young that there's plenty of time for him to develop and become a great player in the league. So if it's not there immediately, nobody should panic. He can go back to the OHL. And if he does, he's going to dominate there. So it probably would be good for him to do that if, you know, again, if the fit isn't there right away at the NHL level. So anyway, love you, Chris. Thanks for joining us. That is all that we have this week on the show. So again, we'll be back with more of a typical format next week. Hopefully we'll be back in studio. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you haven't before, leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it on next week's show. We'll talk to you all very soon for episode 205. Cheers.